my experience in the years that I have been here that people who gravitate to churches and spiritual centers like this one are fairly independent people, which isn't all that surprising because we tend to be people who like to be in control of our life. We tend to be people who like to make our own decisions. And when it comes to the spiritual side of life, we like to know that the relationship that we have with the God of our understanding is not a one-sided relationship. It's more of a co-creational process. So that means that we, all of us, not just us here, we are not just a part of creation, we're actually part of the intelligence that did all of the creating, which is something more. So that means on a good day when we're doing it right, which is any day when we aren't getting in our own way, that's what a good day is, that we can create whatever we choose to create, because we are creative spiritual beings at our center. So our spirituality is just as important to us as our physical body, because just like we use our body to move and feel and to experience life, we can use the invisible, intelligent, creative spirit in us to think what we choose to think, to set the thoughts that we have in motion, and to put emotional power behind those thoughts until the invisible becomes visible, until the thought becomes the thing. And that's pretty powerful stuff. But we also realize that life would not be nearly as enjoyable if we were just running around all by ourselves, creating our own stuff and pursuing our own dreams without having anyone to share it with. Because the truth is, we need each other. We do. We need each other. Now, we don't necessarily need each other to create the stuff that we want. We can do that ourselves. But we do need each other to give meaning and purpose to what we create, and we also need each other to create those things that require more than one person, like families and friendships and communities. That's why creating things like love and peace and harmony, when we get to the level that that's what we work on creating, feels so much better over the long run than just creating cars and houses and money, though there's nothing wrong with those things. Because creating love and peace and sharing provides a level of mutual support and synergy where the whole is greater than the sum of the part, and it provides a recognition of our common spirituality that reinforces our connection with God by spiritualizing our connection with one another. In a way, it's like climbing a mountain alone as opposed to climbing a mountain with a group. Now, if we do it on our own and we reach the top on our own, it gives us this feeling of power, this sense of accomplishment, because we've demonstrated that we're able to use our own individual skill to overcome challenges and to make it to the top, and there's a certain satisfaction in that. But when we climb the mountain with other people, where all of us are combining our skills and we're helping each other over the rough spots, there's a different kind of satisfaction to that. Because we feel a sense of accomplishment then that's not only larger than us, it's also deeper and richer, because not only did we prove that we can do what we did, climbing the mountain, we've also proven to ourselves and to others that we can help others while using our skill and allow them to help us, which is important. Because there's something about helping other people that gives us a sense of purpose, and there's something about allowing them to help us that keeps our ego in check and helps us to stay connected with the rest of the world. But sometimes we find that life is about more than just combining our strengths with the strengths of others. Sometimes life is about having to use our strength to help or to make up for someone else's weakness. You see, one of the more difficult things about being here in this physical world, especially for those of us who realize how powerful every single person is figuring out how to deal with people who do not yet know how powerful they are. It is. When we see people who appear to be living in pain or fear or in such a state of helplessness that they have no idea where to go or what to do, we feel the need, because we know the strength that we have, how can I help? We feel the need to ask, how can I help? Now, it's hard enough when we're watching the suffering on a world scale, when we're watching things like the suffering in Iraq and Darfur and New Orleans or the tsunami in Indonesia, all those things. We all want to get involved. We all want to help then, and we do. But what about on a more personal level? What about a family member who's always asking for money? Okay, what about a neighbor who is always calling us, wanting to use our time to complain about their kids or their marriage? What about a friend who is destroying their life and their family through addiction? What about them? What should we do? What is the best way for us to help them without our getting consumed by their problem? That's what I want to talk about this morning. When we see someone in our life who is obviously in need, there are several questions that we should ask ourselves before we get involved. And the first question is obviously, should I do anything? And the answer to that, of course, based on the spiritual qualities of love and compassion, is yes. Yes, we should do something. Every great spiritual teacher has told us that when we help other people, they say that we are serving God. That's what many of them said. Now, we say it a little bit differently here. We say that when we help someone, the God in us is recognizing the God in them, and that by helping them, we help all of humanity, including ourselves, because we're all one. We're all connected. However, not only is helping other people just a nice thing to do, it's also an integral part of who and what we are. In fact, there have been recent experiments in science and psychology, both, I won't go into them, where they've used MRIs and all sorts of scenarios, where they have discovered that we are actually hardwired in our brain, in our physique, we are hardwired to help each other. We have this inner drive that's a part of our nature that pushes us to practice things like cooperation and empathy and fairness. So it's a natural drive that we have. But how we help one another is sometimes more important than whether we help one another. All right? And that's because, that's why the next question that we need to ask ourselves before we do anything is, do they want my help? Followed closely by the question, am I able to help them? So let's talk about these two questions and what the answers mean. Do they want my help? Now, first, this seems like a pretty straightforward question. If someone wants my help, I give it. If they don't want my help, I leave them alone. That doesn't seem too difficult. But as we all know, it's frequently a little more complicated than that. For example, if I have a friend who is a severe alcoholic and they ask me to buy them beer, I'm probably going to say no, all right? Or if my brother wants to borrow money so that he can play the lottery or play the horses, my response would probably be, I don't think so. On the other hand, what if a friend was too sick to take care of themselves, but they didn't want to inconvenience us, so they said that they didn't need any help? What about that? Most of us would probably show up at their house anyway, even though they said they didn't want us to, and they'd appreciate it. Or what if our child came home from school extremely upset, but they said they didn't want to talk about it, they'd handle it themselves? Most of us would try to find out what was wrong so we could help them deal with it. So sometimes our decision to help or not to help may go against the other person's wishes. Then there's the next question. Am I able to help them? Once again, that seems pretty straightforward. If I'm able to help them, then I should. If I'm not able to help them, then I need to keep out of the way or maybe find someone else who can help them in another way. But the problem here is pretty much the same as it was in the last question. Just because I have the resources or the time or the energy, is this the best way for me to use it? In other words, I have to ask myself, are they willing to take responsibility for their part in the problem and their part in the solution? Or if we help them today, are we going to have to do the same thing tomorrow and the day after that? Now, I know some of you are familiar with the Al-Anon program, and you probably recognize this as the classic codependency trap. Anybody familiar with codependency here? Okay. That's when we give something whatever they ask for, and it only enables them to continue their destructive behavior. It doesn't help us, and it doesn't help them. All it does in the long run is create resentment. But the good news with all of this is there is actually a spiritual approach to helping people that we can use, which only requires inner awareness and focused attention on our part. That means when we're asking ourselves these questions, we have to get our minds straight about a few things before we get involved. or in the language of this teaching, we have to get clear in our own consciousness about what is really going on, both out there and in here, and what part we choose to play. Because if we don't, we might end up trying to help and making the situation worse, or even worse than that, not helping someone when we could really do any good, when we could really do some good. Now, before going on, just so there's no misunderstanding as we have this discussion, I do want to emphasize, and this is in the spiritual solution, that the qualities of love, kindness, and compassion should always be at the center of every relationship we have with any other person. But we also have to realize that the most loving, kind, and compassionate action we can take is not always the most obvious. That's why we should always stop and think about what we are doing when we try and help people, whether they ask us for help or not. And I say this because there are a few of us, probably no one in here, in the second service, I think there might be a few. There are a few of us who seem to feel that our purpose in life is to help people become what we want them to be. You ever notice that? All right. My teacher, Kennedy Schultz, he once said the first commandment should be, thou shalt mind thy own business. And then we wouldn't need the others, you know. It was great. You know, if we really want to help, that is, if our intention is to make a positive difference in someone else's life, especially if it's someone we care about, and to do this in a healthy and balanced way, we first need to look in here, which is, to put a spiritual thing on it, this is where spirit resides. Only the spirit that we get in touch with in here is not a person. It's not a white pigeon that flies around, you know, it's none of that. It's the universal intelligence that shows up as our inner wisdom. Or as I sometimes say in the meditation, it's the thoughts flowing through our mind, it's the life flowing through our veins, the love flowing through our heart, and the passion that flows through our soul. So we need to be aware of our thoughts, which include our assumptions, our motivation, and our expectations, and we need to become aware of our feelings, both positive and negative. You see, when someone seeks our help, our emotions are not always as nice as we would like them to be. They may range from love and sympathy on the one hand to resentment or fear on the other. We may be excited about sharing in what we have, or we may be afraid that if we keep giving them what we have, that we won't have any for us. We may sympathize with their situation, or we may resent the fact that they got themselves in that situation. Or maybe we're just afraid because we're dealing with all of our own stuff. You know, it's kind of funny. When someone asks for our advice or our opinion, most of us are extremely generous. Have you noticed? But if they ask for our time or our money, then the red flags go up, all right? That's why we have to be honest and clear about what we are thinking and feeling when a request for help comes in, and deal with that before we deal with them. So the first thing we need to do, this is in the spiritual approach, if someone asks for our help or if it looks like help is going to be required, the first thing we need to do is to stay present mentally, physically, and spiritually. Now, staying physically present is pretty simple. That means not turning away, not plugging our ears, not going to the other side of the street or refusing to answer the phone. Staying present mentally means not allowing our mind to automatically go to that place where we assume we know everything that's going on, we know what they're doing. It means paying attention, listening, and being open to all the different ways that we could respond from being totally involved to walking away. But being present spiritually means that we stay in a place in consciousness of love and compassion, seeing the good in that person, even if they themselves have forgotten that it's there. That's what being present spiritually means. The next thing we need to do, and this is the hard one, is to not be judgmental. That means we don't need to judge the person or the problem. We don't need to judge how or why they got in that situation, or judge what they haven't done to get themselves out. Now, it doesn't mean we have to approve of their behavior or to not be aware of their mistakes. It just means we don't get all caught up in right and wrong or good and bad. It means we don't get attached to the drama that we see or to any particular outcome, and we don't try to impose our needs and desires on them. We simply see the situation for what it is and not try to make it into anything more. You see, we have to remember that every person that we meet, no matter what's going on or how bad it looks, is on their spiritual path, just like we are. Now, sometimes that path's straight. Sometimes it winds a little bit. Sometimes it's really crooked. Sometimes it's smooth, and sometimes it's bumpy. Now, we may find it easy to be sympathetic when someone needs help for something that doesn't seem to be their fault. But what about this thing we talk about here, this idea that we all create our experience? What about that? Well, it's true. We do create our own experience, and they created theirs. But we also need to recognize that even though we are all exactly where we are by right of consciousness in life, some people haven't figured it out yet. Some people just haven't broken the code. In either case, neither blame or sympathy needs to come into the equation. Now, sympathy and blame may make us feel better. They may make us feel noble or right, both of which feel really nice when you're dealing with people, but they don't help. They just get in the way. Instead, our decision to help or not to help has to come purely from what is in our consciousness, not from what we see out there. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves manipulated by events and people until eventually we find it hard to help anyone. You know, the best help that we can give anyone in our life is to recognize and honor their divinity. That's the best help we can give. And we do that best by creating a space in our own heart and mind where we can see that other person as a perfect spiritual being who actually has the power, whether they know it or not, to move beyond whatever situation they're in. But we need to create that space in us so completely that our outer behavior and our outer demeanor perfectly reflects our inner intention. And from there, whatever we decide to do, then we can actually know that what we did was truly what we felt we had to do, and what we did served us both and the people we were trying to help. Now, if we show up with someone who asks for help with an open mind, completely present, without judging, and recognizing their spiritual perfection, then we create a space in the world for them to become what we know they can be, even if they haven't figured it out yet. Now, we can still give them money, we can still give them support or advice or an open ear, but the most significant and meaningful help that we are giving them is to be a mirror for them where they can see themselves as something greater than the situation that they're in. Now, if they can see themselves in that, it's wonderful. Change will come and it'll probably last. But if they don't see their reflection in that mirror, or if they refuse to look, we are not responsible. They are. Maybe we aren't the help that they need. Maybe they haven't hit bottom yet. Maybe the pain they're in isn't severe enough to make them want to change. That's their choice, and we need to honor that choice, even if it breaks our heart to see them in pain. Now, one more thing. We may occasionally feel the need to provide assistance to someone against our better judgment. You ever have to do that? Okay, most of us have. If someone has gotten themselves into a situation where they probably will not survive before they get out, we're probably going to help. Or if their actions are hurting other people that we care about, we may need to bail them out. We may need to give them some cash to get them through a crisis. We may need to listen to them cry about their problems one more time. We may need to pick them up at 3 a.m., or we may need to give them a place to stay. But the thing to remember here is, when someone in our life needs that kind of help, it is rarely a one-time event. It's rarely a one-time event. We have probably picked them up before, we probably bailed them out before, and they probably slept on our couch more than once. How many of you have a friend or a relative who fits this model? Good, I'm not the only one. That's nice. Now, if that is a situation that we find ourselves in, it tells us two things. First of all, it tells us that the help that they really need is a whole lot bigger than the help we've been giving, That's the first thing he tells us. And second, it tells us that we need to create boundaries and to make those boundaries clear to them, but more importantly, to make those boundaries clear to us. Now, on the first point, if what we are doing is allowing someone, especially someone we care about, to continue their dysfunctional behavior and to repeat their negative experiences at our expense, then we are as much at fault for being there as they are. Maybe we think we're the only ones who can save them. Maybe we think they'll never be able to make it on their own. That kind of thinking on our part reinforces their inability to see themselves as something greater, which is precisely why we need to have the boundaries. You see, the boundaries are more for our benefit than theirs. They keep us from being a part of the problem, and they allow us to recognize the gifts that we've already given and the help that we've already offered without feeling guilty if they try to tell us that it's not enough. Just like we are co-creators with God of our life, when we help someone else, we become co-creators with them of the life that we're both living. But our giving and our receiving with them have to be in balance. Otherwise, it's going to create more problems than it solves. Our willingness to help and honor them and their willingness to receive our help and to honor us creates a powerful bond that benefits not only the two of us, but every other person on earth. That's why every act of kindness is a blessing to the world, someone once said. Now, as we enter into this season over the next 6 or 7 weeks of gratitude and giving with Thanksgiving and Christmas and Hanukkah and all the holidays, a lot of us are probably going to find ourselves helping other people who are not as fortunate as we are. And that's a good thing. But we also find ourselves at a time in history where more and more people are in need, physically, financially, and spiritually. A lot of us have friends and family right now who are struggling. And at the same time, some of us here are going through our own issues. Now, from a metaphysical perspective, maybe the reason that we've created this situation collectively is so that we can learn to help one another more than we've been doing in the past few years. That's possible. But when we do decide to give of what we have, as all of us most certainly will, we need to remember that the greatest gift that we can give to someone else, the greatest help that we can give them, is to give them the gift of ourselves. That's why whatever we do to help other people is always more powerful when it comes from a place of love, compassion, and honesty, but also from a place of wisdom, clarity, and understanding. And whether we're the ones who are giving the help or we're the ones who are receiving it, that's what it's all about. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So, thank you. All right. Let's take a few moments. Take these ideas. Take the ones that resonated. Take them as your own. Take a breath or two. And recognize that the power that created the universe, the power that continues to create and sustain all things, creating them out of itself, created us and every other person. So every single person is divine. Every single person is the individual expression of God in the world with all the power that Spirit has, with all the ability to find solutions and ideas, with the inner strength to do what needs to be done to change. This is true of every single person. So as we go into the world, this should not separate us from others. It should join us with them in a bond of mutual support and recognition, with a mutual recognition of our own divinity and theirs. And as we recognize this and allow our relationships to reflect this, we are able to connect and relate to the people in our life in a loving way that allows us to stay centered exactly where we need to be. It gives us the strength to deal with others in an honest and loving way. It gives us the power to help them in the most meaningful way. It gives us the clarity to do what we need to do and to not be manipulated through guilt or any other attitude that someone else projects upon us. So we begin to look at every person in our life or every person we know, those we may have felt sorry for, those we may have resented, those who seem to bring up anger whenever we're with them, and we release all these things. We simply see them as a perfect idea in the mind of a loving God and support them in whatever they need to do to recognize that truth. Now, I invite you now to take a few moments in silence. And in this silence, for all of us, I invite you to take someone in your life that you may have been looking at with resentment or sympathy and see them in your mind's eye and practice for a moment seeing them as a perfect spiritual being who is able to heal themselves and who invites and uses the help that we can bring to their healing. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness, for this better way of seeing and being with those in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We accept its sacred significance in our life, in our relationships. We honor those that we are joined with. We honor those everywhere, even people we don't know. We see them for what they are, knowing their truth and knowing ours. This is the power we have to create. This is the power we have to heal. This is the power we have to be in a better place than we've ever been before. With gratitude and thanksgiving, we accept this truth as our own, and we release it into consciousness, allowing this to be the truth for us and for every other person in our life. And so it is.